Hello and welcome to the Race to Alaska podcast. I'm Jesse, the race boss, recording on a beautiful Pacific Northwest day, and I'm here to introduce you to yet another three teams aiming for victory in this year's R2AK. I've got no co-host this week, so I can either ramble on about something inconsequential and stupid, which would be very Race to Alaska of me, or I can go straight to the tape. Votes? Anybody? Okay, we'll go straight to the tape. First up this week is Blake Hansen of Team Boogie Barge. Followers of 7048 and Washington 360 are going to know Boogie Barge pretty well, and will also have a head start in understanding just what a unique boat it is that they'll be heading to Alaska on. Race boss Emeritus Daniel chatted with Blake just the other day, and here they are.
Blake, so you're part of Boogie Barge this year. What's the first race you did with this whole group of races? What got you into racing? Because you're not a big racer prior to 7048, right? You weren't doing a lot of racing before that, or were you?
I would say I would have signed up for anything like this if it ever existed before. But this was, you got to wait for the person to start the race that you're going to want to do. And this is the one that I want to do. And I don't plan to miss any. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Okay. So what was it that got you hooked? What was the whole idea?
Well, I've been kayaking with my parents since I was born, and I just love traveling over the water, and, you know, whether it's playing in the rock gardens on the west coast of Vancouver Island and camping on beaches there, or just going to Blake Island or doing anything like that. I just think that's the best thing you can do with your time. It's just amazing. And I love, I love doing endurance racing too. I did, like, you know, a bunch of bike touring and some racing, not bike racing, but running racing too. And I just love going for a long time and in a certain direction with some vague sort of goal. And so I've always just loved doing that.
Did you ever think that when you kind of signed on, I guess, 7048, so you've done four 7048s, is that right? Or am I missing?
I've done all five 7048s.
All five.
Yeah, but we didn't finish the first one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's it. That's what I was thinking about. Yeah, you've done all five of the 7048s. And then during the COVID years, we ran Washington 360, and you did that.
Yeah.
And then now you're signing on for Race to Alaska, all right, with the kind of the same craft, right? You start out Team Idea, right? Mm-hmm.
It took us a while to think of a good name, but yeah, we just did the same thing for a while. our boat really isn't, you know, when we do the 7048, our boat is, you know, with all of us on it and everything, it weighs like 1200 pounds. You know, it's a really serious craft. And I don't know that we're ever going to beat, like, you know, almost professional racers in boats that weigh like 60 pounds. I don't know that that's really our calling. But we might be able to be more competitive if we train more in a short race like that. But what really makes the Boogie Barge amazing is that you can fall asleep on it and keep going. So the WA 360 is really probably the perfect race for us, and I'm so pumped we're going to do it again next year. And race to Alaska is always been the dream since I heard it existed, and really hoping to do it this year. And hopefully we make it all the way. And if we don't, we'll learn a lot along the way. So, yeah.
Well, it might be worth, since we're doing a podcast, to spend a little time describing your boat. So people have an idea about what it looks like. And I'll start by saying it is pretty unique in my experience of boats on the water. Yeah. In that it, you know, it's a catamaran with two holes. But then stretched across that is your coffin for sleeping in. Yeah. And your, you have two rowing or bicycling stations.
Yeah.
But can you talk a little bit about, like, the generation of, like, one, like, where did you get the idea to build it?
Its
evolution.
I'm certainly not a boat designer, but I know how to make something super long and pointy. So that's what I did. If you look at the bottom of a rowing shell, like a Moss Double or something like that, it's basically just a straight profile from the front to the middle to the back, trying to be as skinny as you can handle and as long as waterline you need. So I'm not an expert boat designer at all, but I did design the hulls, just thinking, you know, that sort of waterline is what we wanted to be competitive with. But for a long race like this, I don't think we have more waterline than we need for sure. They're both 29 feet long, and each hull probably weighs about 100 pounds. They're cedar strip, and they've got kind of a flat spot in the middle, which I've sort of come to over the years, knowing that you've got to have a flat spot in the middle to do stuff on. So it makes sense to have sort of this sort of boxy structure in the middle of it. Each hull is 12 inches long, 12 inches wide and 29.
Right. Now, what do you mean, like, to do stuff on? To be able to turn or to be able to?
Oh, no, to be able to sleep or step or walk or, you know, do anything.
Oh, so, okay. Got it.
So there's, and then, you know, and then I've added quite a bit of bow on this boat. I added 14 inches of like rounded deck on the tops of the bows to try to shed some of the water that's going to be coming in our face when we go into the waters we'll inevitably see in this race. So that's the hulls. And then there's like two aluminum cross beams that kind of just bridge the gap between the two hulls. And then there's a recumbent tandem bike that is like bolted to the middle that goes down through two right angle drives to a prop that that we machined. It's like 18 inches wide, and the prop is driven by the two peddlers. So
yeah.
So that's the basic structure that gets us places. And then on either side of the peddling station is like a deck right now that does three things. You can stand on it if you need to do something. And then you can pull some ropes and it expands like a pop-up car tent, sort of like a top of your car tent, and makes sort of the minimum viable amount of space that you could change your clothes in and then sleep in on either side. And then on top of that deck is now some riggers and some sweep rowing stations, which we don't really know how much they're going to be back up in case something breaks or how much we're going to have true enthusiasm for rowing while we do this race or not. So we'll see how that goes.
Did you ever have a thought of like, I mean, is it even designed to have all four going at once, the two bikes and the two rowers?
Yeah. That's what we'll do on the proving grounds for sure. I'm sure we're not going to just like sit around for the, you know, and sleep on that part. But
yeah.
In the WA 360 in, what was that, 2021, we had three of us. Josh wasn't on the boat this time. It was just Kean, Taylor, and me. And we had one coffin for sleeping that was rigid and way too small. It's 18 inches wide. Your shoulder is like,
oh my God,
inside of it. And it was awesome. It was just so fun to go against the Bend Racing team, which was doing the light and fast and super hardcore option. and we were doing the, you know, anyway, that system works okay. But 4 hours on and 2 hours off, which is what happens when you have three people on the boat, is brutal. We're hoping that, you know, this time we'll have 4 hours on, 4 hours off, or maybe two on, two off during the day or something like that. And maybe it'll be a little bit more sustainable.
Did you ever have any idea? Let's see, in Washington 360, it's been a couple of years, but you ended up pulling out in Bellingham. I think you were you in first place? Or
no, we were just behind Ben Racing. There was like
you were
a
just
pretty brief period of time when we were leading the race when they like, I don't know, had trouble in the waves and got out in Edmonds for a second.
Yeah.
But we were definitely breathing down their necks and they were definitely tired. And we were feeling pretty rough too, but we were feeling, I would say, sustainably bad. And I think, you know, you can't talk about, you know, hypotheticals, but we had to stop and go to work because none of us thought we were going to do very well. So we all thought we'd just give it 3 days and see what happens. So we all had to go back for job responsibilities and then come back and finish the race. In the weekend or something. Yeah.
Right. And you finished. And did you ever think that you in that race or in 70-48, when you started doing it, that you would do so well? Because in 70-48, you're in, I can't remember, like fifth place, pretty consistently top five, five, six, seven teams, right?
Yeah. I'm pretty delusional. I'll believe in it all for sure. But I don't like plan ahead to actually do well. So, you know, I don't know. I think we can, you know, we thought we might do that well. We didn't think there'd be no wind. That was real exceptional. There was
right.
no wind. But, you know, we've done okay in 7048, and we really never trained at all. And we need to try that some year and just train.
One day.
Yeah.
Yeah, it should be worth noting because you didn't mention it, I didn't mention it, but boogie boards has no sails at all. Yeah. It is entirely human powered.
It is a boat that looks, it would look great with a sail on it.
Yeah.
It is entirely designed around concepts that support sailing. And I think if I had any confidence in my ability as a sail and, you know, sailing boat designer, I would probably try that. And I probably will at some point try putting a sail and a couple of dagger boards in it because it would just be fun. But right now, if you put a sail on it, we would go from being a pretty exceptional human powered craft to being a pretty mediocre, sailing craft. So,
yeah, right.
Even though I know we're going to be out there, we're going to at some point get some wind from behind us and be like, why didn't we put a sail on this thing? I think
yeah,
to try to be a human powered craft for at least one more go.
So, you know, there's a, you know, there's probably a lot of wonder. Okay. There's probably a lot of wonder about your boat and in heavy weather, right? Following seas, you know, surf boat. And maybe I'll back up a little bit, but when you think about the Race to Alaska and you've spent time up on Vancouver Island, I don't know about your other crew members, but you have a general idea of what kind of weather you can see out there. What are you really expecting for the race? Like, what are your expectations?
It's highly likely that it'll be lumpy and vertical seas, and there'll be 27 knots against us in Johnstone Strait because that's what it likes to do there. It's also highly likely that it'll get pretty lumpy around Cape Caution, and there'll be some like breaking waves and some weird shallow water. There's a lot of other stuff that's pretty likely, and I have a really hard time picturing a scenario in which this boat with the cabins collapsed, like in their lowered section, and you on the oars and on the pedals wearing your dry suits would actually get in trouble. I don't think that we would actually get in trouble. I think the amount of fun that we're having could be greatly reduced in certain scenarios. And my hope is to avoid those scenarios as much as possible. And I know the anchoring and the beaching is just a mess up there. It's terrible.
Right.
I know it's so hard. But if we had any ability to like see the forecast and know that there was going to be definitely more than 15 knots against us for a long time in, and potentially some current fighting that too, I would not feel the need to push on in the night, especially at night, something like that. So
are you planning on like in perfect scenario, are you going to do watch on, watch off as long as you can go through the night, day and night, or are you planning beach stops at some point anchoring up?
We are definitely not stopping unless we have good reasons to stop.
Hell yeah, really? That's awesome.
That's the point. That's the point of the boat. That's why we built it, and that's what we're here to do. But I know that when you say that as someone that's never done the Race to Alaska, you need to caveat that with the fact that is just not going to be possible the whole time, guaranteed. So I think, you know, for instance, last year when we were not in the race, but I was obviously tracker junking it up like normal, there was plenty of times when I would hope that we were like the 3 days that, you know, Ken Deem and Wade Forger, all those other people were stuck for, you know, I hope to be stuck in an okay place too for that period of time. And not, when we go all day and all night, in the WA 360, we showed that we could go 100 miles a day.
Yeah.
But that's not the ideal scenarios are few and far between, in this race. So we just hope to make hay while the sun shines. So,
yeah. And to get back to some of the heavy weather, I know a lot of questions come up around capsizing, and you have set up like riding lines. You haven't actually, have you capsized the vessel in its current? Because this is this is like the fifth, sixth iteration of the boat, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have not. And I think it's a little bit, I don't think anyone's entered a human powered catamaran in a race like this and learned how likely it is to capsize this boat.
Right.
I know that you should definitely have a plan, and we'll have some rope set up, and we can definitely do some pulling if we flip over and try to get this thing back upright. And hopefully we've already got our dry suits on if we get in a situation that might look like that at all. I think you would need to be hit by like surf or a breaking wave or just like some sort of crazy. I mean, I know it's the craziest water imaginable up there, but like I don't think it's very likely that we're going to flip this thing. But we should definitely be ready for it.
Yeah, I knocked on wood for you just now, so you're
Thank
covered.
you.
Yeah, you're covered.
Yeah, it's
Yeah, totally.
It's 6.5 feet wide, and it has a tremendous amount of buoyancy on either side. So you would have to get that thing vertical, and a breaking wave would absolutely do that, if it was big enough and steep enough. But and I've got an idea of something I might try to rig up that would use the 12-foot oars to also help you right the boat. Sort of a riding pole that you see on some catamaran situations some of the time, because we don't have dagger boards, and you know it is going to be a heavy boat, and we're going to have an EPIRB and PLBs for everybody too, so you know, going to sort of weigh our chances and think about, you know, the situations we're in, and also have a plan if the worst does happen. So yeah.
I mean, I can totally see that, like a riding pole. Even with a line attached aloft, give you a lot of leverage to get that thing over pretty easily.
Yeah.
If you needed
it. You would need to stabilize the oar bow and stern, and then also tie it to the far side, and then have everyone climb like a rope ladder up there while their feet are touching the side of the boat. And I think that would work. But I'd rather spend my stellar time doing a few other things than try that right now. So, yeah.
I totally get it. Yeah. Stay upright. Focus on staying upright. But yeah, it's, and dry suits are a great cushion for that. You know, you can be in the water a good amount of time with those, messing around. Yeah. Let's see. So, clearly I know Ketchikan's the goal, right? I mean, it's the goal of everyone who races to Alaska. Yeah. But, and that is one kind of benchmark of a successful trip. If that doesn't happen, well, I mean, can it still be successful for you? Are there other things that tell you it's successful?
Oh yeah. I think I would be like a little disappointed if we didn't make it through Seymour Narrows at least this time. But if you get to Johnstone Strait and there's like 5 or 6 days of like just onslaught northerlies, I've talked with my crew about this. Like, we're not in this to just continually punish ourselves and make it take forever and not, you know, and just keep going no matter what. We don't have any problem stopping if we learned enough and don't need to go any farther. So, but I think that if you stop for 3 days, at some point, it's pretty likely that you'll still have enough time to get there in a couple of weeks or so. With this.
Oh, yeah.
But then again, never done it before. You got to caveat it with, I don't know what I'm doing for real. So we'll see.
Have your other crew's not there, but I'm wondering, is it you that has the most kind of sea time experience and time up there, or are they packing some history with that as well?
So Josh is the welder on the team, and also he teaches he like runs a youth programming for Cascade Bicycle. So he's got he builds frames and stuff like that. So he's done a lot of super tough stuff, but very, you know, little experience on the water. Taylor's family has always done sailing, so she has quite a bit of experience with the Desolation Sound and stuff like that. And Keen's done a little bit of that with her too, but it's mostly me for maritime experience.
Yeah, you know, and I'm sure it hasn't gone beyond your notice that if you've actually make it to Ketchikan, I mean, I think we'll have to make up the record that you're going to set, but there's I mean, there's nothing like what you were bringing to this race has been seen. You know, Matt Johnson once years ago, he had this thing I affectionately called the egg that he was pedaling up to. But, you know, it was, I think, like day two, he was in the Gulf Islands when he had to call it quits. And that may be the closest that I can recall.
Well, Matt's creation is definitely more refined than our creation. And he has definitely more cycling experience than we do. But yeah, tendonitis or something, and that was it, you know. I would actually, do you remember Soggy Beavers? 2015?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So they have like an OC6 or something, right?
OC6, yep.
Yeah, and they had a little sail, but I think it was not a serious part of what they did. It was mostly paddling for them, maybe.
Yeah.
And they slept while they paddled too. And so I think they made it in like 11 days or something like that, something crazy like that.
Yeah, it was a crazy, that was a crazy year too. A lot of wind. And yeah, and
Oh, really? Yeah.
they had a lot of, they had that sail up. I mean, I don't know how much it helped them. I mean,
Yeah.
psychologically, I think what they ended up saying was that it allowed one rower to rest that normally couldn't rest.
Okay.
So it gave them a little more downtime. But I mean, I don't, the thing I think about is not as much the rowing or not even necessarily the human powered, but the fact that you have, you're doing two bicycles as your primary propulsion on a catamaran that you've designed, is, I mean, I can't think of a comparable in the race. It's incredible.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that it's pretty exciting to be this weird. So, yeah, we're hoping to do different things with a different boat, but and we've tested it enough to know kind of what's going to happen, but once you see it in those circumstances and in that wild of a place, you know, it is it's you know, we'll see how it performs. I think we'll
Yeah.
do okay. Yeah.
Has there been anything you've been super surprised about, like you and your team or on the boat for doing all the 70/48s? Because they all three of the races, 70/48, Washington 360, Race to Alaska, they're just kind of like you're on your own. It's a long way to go. You're trying to do it as quickly as possible, and you're limited in your resources. And so the conditions of the challenge, I feel like are pretty high. And I'm wondering, like, have is there any are you, you're the old salt sitting in the room. Is there anything you'd impart to people who are thinking about going down this long and potentially savage road?
Long and potentially what?
Savage road.
Oh yeah. Well, so when we did the 70/48 and then turned around and did the WA 360, we went 400 miles in a boat that basically had been out for like 10 miles before that. And I think about all of the little screws that needed to stay tight while we did that, to have the boat continue to work, and they all did. It worked. It was great. And really, I don't know, when we've been working on this boat so hard for so long, it's just so, I've always had to like force myself to stop working on like the wooden like boat part and like only focus on the mechanical stuff, because you're not going to really care if the boat's like totally perfectly shaped or anything like that. You're going to really care if the you know, the gears are not working well, and you have to listen to that or fight that for like hours and hours and hours. So I don't know how
Yeah.
much we have to decide how many spare parts and how many spare things we're going to bring for everything. But I feel great that we have some oars to fall back onto, if anything does break. But in terms of the adventure and like the trip itself, you know, I'm sure that it's going to be a lot colder than we think it's going to be. I'm sure it's going to be a lot wetter than we think it's going to be, and that it's going to be wilder and more beautiful than anything we've done before. So hopefully those things balance out to the point where, you know, we're at least in type B fun, if not type A fun some of the time.
I would love to be the person that is, up in Fitzhugh Sound on their summer trip in their little boat, and they're enjoying this wilderness and, the isolation, 60, 100 miles away from everybody. And they look up and they get to see Boogie Barge just trucking along north. And they're like, what the hell is that? I mean, what a scene.
In the past, we've not been super fast, but we are relentless. So that's our goal. We did a little test run in South Sound the other a week or two ago. We started at 10 p.m. Not because that's a good time, but that's when we finished working on the boat. And we went out from Point Defiance and went under the Narrows and back up towards Vashon and back. And we went 43 miles between 10 p.m. and 8 a.m. And it was
Whoa.
just super pretty out there to just, you know, be out on the water and watch, you know, the small changes in wind and small changes in the conditions. We've worked on this boat so hard for so long. We've got to enjoy it so little at this point. I'm hoping that we tip the scales a little bit towards that and at least make a good shot and a good run this time around. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're my, I think, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, Race to Alaska, when we were like thinking, you know, what is it for? Who is it for? Why, you know, why do we do it? You know, it's, you're my favorite Gonzo team, I got to say. And I was, when I saw your application come across the wire, I was ecstatic. I'm like, hell yeah. Of course he's going to do this. It is the thing that needs to happen next.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's fun to be doing at least a couple things that don't have direct parallels in the past. And, you know, I love this race too, because the hotshot trimarans, like, they hit logs and they get overloaded and they get a little broken sometimes. And the monohulls, like, always have these like dark horse stories too. And everyone's got to be able to move your boat at least a little bit. And really the most interesting person is the kayaker that finishes the race in 22 days or 21 days or whatever it is. So, so it's a beautiful thing in that as people have said before, like, the finisher is almost the least interesting part of the race. The stories that you create on are so deep based on the small amount of required weirdness that makes everything different and actually interesting. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've been part of this racing family for a bunch of years, but I'm glad to see you enter into the Race to Alaska family, you know, legit. Well done.
I don't feel quite legit yet. I think we'll need to make it a couple hundred miles and then I'll feel like we really did it. So
a couple hundred miles. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I usually give out the club card when you cross the start line, but you want to go a couple hundred miles.
That's good. I'll take the club card, and maybe there's a Supreme membership that happens around Port Hardy or something like that. At least.
Yeah, we got to talk to Jesse about that. That'll be good. Yeah. All right, Blake. I think that's all I got. I'm so glad you spent some time talking.
Thanks so much. All right.
Yeah, thank you. See you later. Good luck on that.
Thank you.
There it is, Team Boogie Barge. You will be grateful to know that I'm not going to mess around with some light banter here in the break, since there is no one to banter with. We're going to get straight to Team Make Fetch Happen. Jen of Team Fashionably Late first met Christian Nally during her first run in 2018 when her team anchored at Galliano Island. That happens to be where Christian lives. And recently, they reunited to talk about this year's race.
Well, hi, Christian. It's a total pleasure to get a chance to meet you well in the sort of universe here and be able to talk with you.
Likewise,
how are you feeling?
Likewise. It's a bit of, not to overstate it too much, it's a bit of an emotional roller coaster, frankly. And you know, voyages are like this too, right? As you're aware. It's like when I got accepted into doing the race, I was super stoked and excited, and I still am, frankly, right? But then every now and again you get this, oh crap, what have I gotten myself into feeling, right? And that's the go back to the spreadsheet. And, you know, when I check a thing off, two more appear. And yeah, there's a lot going on.
How many rows do you have on your spreadsheet?
Right now, about 35. They're color coded and prioritized.
Oh, wow.
And each one's got a certain amount of status that it's how finished is it? And there's a few zeros out of 10 on that list. I'm not proud to say. But
it sounds like
there.
You're right on the right point for, you know, how many days out is it now from the race? I'm sure you know.
6 weeks is is my own internal deadline. It might be a little less, a little more, but yeah, 6 weeks.
All right. So let's go back a bit. It sounds like you've been planning this for a little while. What was the origin point for you?
The first race was 2015, and I knew I was going to race it someday. The only question was when. And it, you know, from then I've been like the consummate tracker junkie, just totally watching the race every year and really very much into it. It got serious, I think, about a year and a half ago, where I'm like, yep, it's time. And I put together some thoughts on how I wanted to do it, and biting way more off than I could chew. Like I want to enter a foiling, kite driven, you know, hybrid, multimodal. Like, I've got some crazy ideas about how to do really well in this race, right? Like, it's a an amazing set of challenges, this race, right? You want a boat that can go really fast when there's no wind and really fast when there's high winds. And I've managed to put together a boat for this year that goes, you know, pretty slow in low winds and pretty slow in high winds. So, and that's just because it's what I have access to, right? But I think if this is a building year, you know?
Yeah. So you've got a fireball. You're raising a fireball.
Yes. Over that like year and a half of really trying to get my act together, I'm privileged enough to be surrounded by some pretty smart folks, right? And I'm like, hey, you want to do Race to Alaska with me? And they're like, yeah, you do you. You know, you go ahead. That'll be fine. You go with it, right? So as a solo entry, I've contemplated, in fact, I picked up a Paper Tiger, which is an Australian catamaran for one, just the mainsail on it. And I flirted with the idea of using that one for about 6 months or so. And after trying it out and attaching the rowing setup onto it, it's like, yeah, you know what? There's not enough room on this thing for me and my gear, plus a rowing setup. So
yeah,
the fireball was sort of the second choice, but it's pretty clear that it's better for me personally. Yeah, to be in.
So you had to jettison the crew to be able to do this.
Well, so although, yeah, I mean, I'm just barely still open to anybody who's got a high strength to weight ratio and wants to, you know, be parked in a fireball for 3 weeks. But we'll see.
The pool is small.
Yeah, very. Yeah. No, really, this is about building perspective for designs to come.
Well, that sounds like a perfect way to do it. And so if you knew in the very beginning when the first race happened, this means that you've been paying attention to wacko crazy races and
absolutely,
you know, human endurance challenges for a while.
Yeah, especially this race. Although, you know, so let's see. In that first year, there was Barefoot Wooden Boats from Gabriola. Mm-hmm. And I actually helped them with their GoFundMe to raise money for new sails for that boat. That's Quill and the Dick Smiley, that boat. And then, you know, I've drawn inspiration from Team Oracle. Janice used to live on Galliano, and I worked on triathlons for her. She was organizing Galliano's version of a triathlon, which is kayaking and biking and running. Super fun race to raise money for the fitness center here. And then, you know, every year seeing boats go by, like I'm seriously a tracker junkie and just love to take, you know, pictures of the teams that are going by and having fun every year, like knowing it's like, yeah, that's gotta be me. That's gotta be me. So, yeah.
Have you gone down to the docks when the teams have been coming in?
At Ketchikan? No.
No, but in Victoria. In
Victoria. I was there for one of the starts last year, actually. I made it down for a start. And we visited Port Townsend one year, my wife and I, just to check it out. And, you know, what a cute town. You know, it's like...
Totally.
It's just for sailors and mariners of all stripes. So what a great place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you get to be in the throng of it this year.
Absolutely.
You got butterflies?
Sometimes, mm-hmm. But when I get on the boat, I know that's where I belong. You know, I feel at home out there.
What kind of sailing background do you have?
Yeah, so I was born at an early age. No, I just grew up in New Brunswick on the St. John River, and there's a kids sailing program back then. So we would sail cadets and stuff. Had fun, did well. Long story short, came out west after grad school and got a boat after I moved to Galliano. Bought an old Columbia 26 off Craigslist, sailed it up from Port Angeles. And then got into the racing circuit. So some Swiftsures, some Southern Straits, tried around Salt Spring at one point. Did the long course on Swiftsure with Skipper Warren on a Contessa. And was in the 2010 Southern Straits with Ed Karadontis on Dusty Mock. And I don't know if people know about that race, but that was a gong show of a race. And there's good stories in that race about like learning more sailing in 3 hours than you have in the previous 3 decades, like,
Right.
yeah, those kinds of experiences. Yeah. And so I draw on that for my entry.
Is this going to be the longest race that you've been
Oh,
in?
by far. Distance
Yeah.
wise, absolutely. Yeah, for in
And
both.
time-wise?
Yeah, I think you know how I had a friend that ran marathons, and once, I mean, he was quite a fast runner, and he would say he's completely more impressed by the people who take all day to finish the marathon. Like, he would do it in, say, 2.5, 3 hours or something,
Yeah.
and then, but there's people who are out there all day long, just going, 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 and what a different kind of, and from my description of a fireball, where it's like slow when there's no wind, and fast when slow when there's a lot of wind, I feel like I'm going to be out there for a while.
Are
Right.
you
I
comfortable
mean,
being wet?
yes, and I have a dry suit, and but there's, it doesn't cover everything, and cold. I did a week long row sail last summer, and I was cold, and one of my guiding principles that I think kicked a lot of this stuff off for me was any idiot can be uncomfortable. Right. And what it says is, it's like it takes a little bit of smarts to put yourself into a tough situation, but to somehow come through it with a bit of, like, a bit of wherewithal. Right. It's like it takes a bit of planning, a bit of, like, it would be better if you had the right clothing, and I
Yeah.
feel like I've made a lot of mistakes over
Good.
time. I'm like trying not to repeat. Right.
I hope they serve you well.
Yeah. We'll see. Right. Yeah. I'll
Yeah.
get back to you on that.
So, what are you going to take with you as your little comfort treat? What's the thing
Such
that's
an
going to get
interesting
you through
question.
this?
Somebody asked, was I going to bring a bit of rum? I might do that. I was thinking of bringing a ukulele or a travel guitar. But there's not a lot of room on this boat, right? Even for the rum. So, yeah,
At least
it's
you can
a
put a little
strength.
flask in your dry food.
I think it's right. It's again, it's a strength to weight ratio thing.
So, and then is this the furthest north you've gone if you get to Ketchikan?
Certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big if, isn't it? Yes.
Well,
Let's see,
there's
how
lots
far
of
north?
ifs that, yeah. I mean, what are you worried about
Well,
along the way of
so you know
getting
what? Fort McMurray probably counts, but that's
there?
inland, right?
Right.
Yeah, that was a while ago. I didn't think of that as a sailing sort of thing, so yeah.
Yeah, what are the kinds of threats that are kind of keeping you awake at night right now?
My lower back. Right. Yeah, that one. The so Johnston Strait, Cape Caution, right? I am very practiced at staying ashore when it's too stormy, right? I've got that move down pat, right? The question is, if you're out there, that, like, how is this boat gonna do? I mean, I'm gonna do a turtle test. I'm gonna be able to flip it over, walk on the bottom, and I'm debating whether to put a float on the top of the mast. Like, I'm not trying to go as fast as I possibly can, but yeah, those are the things that I worry about. I in one of my previous trips, I left the boat high and dry on a high tide and had to figure out how to get it down the beach, right?
What did
That's
you do?
poor planning. I built a little bench that stays with the boat to this day, actually. The bench is nice because it, you put the bench in front of the boat and it's smooth, so it slides over easy, and then you bring the bench to the front and slide it over, and yeah, sort of caterpillar your way down the rocks. 'Cause there were some big rocks that I was getting the boat over. I mean, it's a light boat, but it's a heavy boat when you're by yourself on a high tide.
Yeah, and there's a number of places along there where it's not easy to, find somewhere to pull up also for the night. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been studying the BC Marine Trails site for its, waypoints and descriptions of a variety of different things. Yeah, so much good work has gone on by people up to now that you can leverage their work. Like, part of my race is going to be giving shout outs to a variety of organizations that are doing work that I'm a big supporter of. like Georgia Strait Alliance for environmental stuff, Galliano Conservancy for land covenants and education, Immerse for biodiversity research, and the Hakai Institute, and BC Marine Trails, Cascadia Marine Trails in Washington, and Alaska Marine Trails. Like, there's so much good information out there.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing like the experience of traversing that passageway to see just how huge the coastline is, and the interactions with wildlife are just incredible. Mostly positive. A few bears.
Right. In fact, you know, while we're here, what you must have a story or two to share from your couple of goes at this. What have you like, especially, say, let's trigger on the wildlife stuff. Like, do you have some moments where maybe you were exposed to things you weren't maybe expecting to be exposed
to?
Oh,
absolutely. In our first year, we, oh my gosh, we must've been 2/3 of the way up the course. I can't now exactly remember where it was, but I can tell you what we saw. Came in contact with what looked, it sort of came up from the depths, and we couldn't identify it. It came up from the depths, it floated up, it hit the side of our boat, and it scudded along the side of our boat. And it was pale and terrifying looking, like some kind of long, dead, large creature. We called it the dead thing for weeks. So we didn't immediately recognize it. And it was only talking with a biologist friend later in describing it that it was determined it was a sunfish, a mola mola.
Wow.
And it was large and really weird looking. And it kind of, it must have just been, you know, coming up to the surface. It's pelagic. But it was sort of rolling over in the wake of our boat, like something that was quite long dead and bloated. It was a very creepy feeling. There was nothing else around us, just this strange sea monster coming out.
Wow.
But once we started to learn a little bit more about it later on, it was like, wow, it was a really unique circumstance, and I hope our boat didn't hurt it.
Oh, so do you think it was living?
I can't tell you. Apparently,
not
they
clear.
Just sort of, they don't really propel themselves. They kind of just float around.
Fascinating.
With the
Isn't
currents.
That something? Right?
It was like, so fun. And there was one other time that we saw dolphins, or porpoises, I should say, that were swimming in the wake of our boat, and they were playing underneath the back of our, underneath our stern. And there were it was nighttime, and there were phosphorescence.
Wow. Yeah. Right.
And
so good.
The phosphorescence lighting up in the wake of their swimming past their tails looked like mermaid tails.
Mm.
And it was at that moment looking over the edge that we thought, oh, that's what mermaids look like. Like that's where this myth came from. I get it.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah. Beautiful moments.
Yeah. And there's like citizen scientist research stuff that can, that these sort of sightings and observations can be contributed to.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I'm all here for that, to like, you know, biodiversity.org and iNaturalist and these are outfits to gather these things, because people want to, we want to have documentation for this stuff, because there is real, you know, I mean, it is the original value, you know,
mm-hmm.
never mind. And people lose sight of it, I think, at times,
mm-hmm.
especially if you're not out there in it, right? So I hope to take some pictures and videos and share those along the way. Right?
Oh, yeah, you must be really excited.
I am. I'm writing an app, sort of, it's sort of my own tracker. And I used to teach computer programming. So a bunch of grads and their friends are helping me. We meet once a week and we're putting this together. Maybe we'll get some beta users this year, but basically a chance for people to post sightings and also be fed back information about their race. Like, you are 15% of the way to Ketchikan. And it's got voice recognition and chat and stuff, all sorts of things built into it. So
we'll
see how far we get with that. Yeah, it should be fun.
That's really fun. And so can the wider community participate in that as well?
I hope so. I hope so. We're going to try to get a beta launch out before the race starts. And you know, our aim is to invite other racers to participate if they want. And there'll be things like weather forecasts and tide tables and stuff built into it as too. So the vision is large. We'll see how far we get with it.
That's fantastic. That sounds like a lot of fun. And I imagine that people would be excited about it. I look forward to seeing it.
Yeah. I've been doing weekly scrums with that group, and also some of the mad engineer types. One person who makes bubble machines for public art displays, and another person who's got a kite control mechanism, which is going to be a big feature of the next iteration.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, yeah, some crazy stuff that we've been doing sort of behind the scenes, and it's
I
sort of
like
a
your
watch
long
this year
vision.
kind of thing. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, this is
Yeah.
a
So there, this is 1.0, but there's many more to come.
that's right. I hope so.
Well, looking in the immediate future, what are you up against this weekend? What are you working on?
When word got out amongst my friends and local fireball community that I was trying this, they saw some of the early photographs and they're like, dude, you need new sails, right? So one person has given me some sails. And though it turns out there's a stamp on one of those sails from the 1984 Fireball World Championships. He'd been in it and came 30th, 31st or so.
Wow.
And I don't know that the sails have been used much since then. But they're new, much better than the ones I have. And so now I'm thinking of cutting my old sail down to size so that it's sort of pre-reefed, and then switch that
Nice.
out. So we'll see if that ends up being the right thing to do or not. And my rowing riggers are like, imagine like a hacked sawed up 2x4 stack, right? That's kind of what it is at the moment, and it's all sort of bolted together. And when people look at it, they're like, "You're going to Alaska and that thing, right?" And so I maybe it'll be like, made pretty b
Paint
before the
it
race.
or
Yeah,
something.
something. Yeah, that's right, something. And I should probably figure out the boom tent too,
Yes.
right? For comfort. Yeah,
Your
Snoopy in the
dogs.
background. Yeah, that Snoop Dogg. He was the kind of the inspiration behind the team name, because I'd take him for walks and he'd be trying to make fetch happen, right?
Of course he would.
Right.
Well, it's a humorous name in both contexts.
Fair enough, right? Like a mean girl's dad joke, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Christian, I know you've got lots to do, and it's been a total pleasure chatting with you. It's
Likewise.
only a few weeks away before we'll see you arriving on the docks in Victoria.
Yeah. On time,
On
right?
time,
I hope.
100%.
Yeah,
I'm
fair.
gonna be there to say hi in person, and I look forward to it.
Nice. Fantastic.
And I hope the next few weeks present all kinds of fun and adventure and success as you get ready.
Thank you. Yeah, and thank you for everything that you're doing, and that so much work is going on for this race by volunteers and the folks at headquarters. And yeah, keep up the good work. It's super fun.
If you listen to that whole interview without Googling fireball dinghy, please do that right now. All right, last but not least, and yes, not least because we still have more teams in the hopper you've yet to meet. Last but not least is Team Not So Fast. This is another team using the word not, spelled with a K, which carries some kind of Race to Alaska penalty with it, yet to be determined. But either way, I spoke to them just the other day, and I am very curious whether their trailer is going to make it over the mountains for the race start.
Can you hear me?
I got you now. Yeah.
Nice. All right, we're all met. Not So Fast was relatively quick about joining the Zoom. You see what I did there? We got four of the five. Sam is off being a nurse, saving lives, doing way more important things than the rest of you. Because Chris, you're a firefighter, but you are not wearing an SCBA at the moment. So I think you're probably in your useless phase of the day.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Working on projects.
Working on boat projects. That's a great thing to be doing. I'll just keep going through. Matt is hiding in what appears to be a closet of an auditorium through a phone connection in Las Vegas, watching his daughter's volleyball tournament. She is currently playing, and he has decided that this interview is more important than his daughter's championship. Chad, where are you coming at right now? You look like you're in a cubicle.
Yeah, I'm in my office in Boise, Idaho right now.
What happens in that office?
We do a lot of research on the sagebrush biome, mostly post-fire restoration research. Yeah, Matt Germino on this is actually my boss, so he's letting me take a month off of work to sail to Alaska.
That's great. So three of you then in the fire service in some way. I imagine that's how the three of you know each other.
Four of us.
It is four of you. Got it. So four of you are in the fire service, and that's how you know each other. How do you know the fifth guy?
Sam is just a friend from a long time. And we should say, me and Paul are just, we're not that smart compared to Matt and Chad. We just put fires out and pick up heavy objects. That's our main job. Matt and Chad do research and sciencey stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Team Not So Fast, how you came to be. Who would play you in the epic Steven Spielberg directed film, and what would the outcome of that film be? Chris, you're the captain of the team. At least that's what it says on paper. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, that's true. Boy, I'd say we're most like Empire Strikes Back, where I bet we'd be the dark side that gets destroyed.
Okay.
Through a bunch of epic failures.
I'm hearing a lot of confidence shine through. There was a quote in your application that I just was looking at, and somebody wrote in there, "We're better skiers than sailors."
Yeah.
How did you all together settle on racing to Alaska, doing a sailing adventure together?
Well, it was really Chris's leadership on this. It's kind of been a longstanding dream of his, many years in the making, actually. And his motivation and absurd optimism that we could do this is really infectious. And how could you not follow a crazy leader like Chris Mattson? So we've all kind of, you know, we're a hodgepodge in the way that we've come together to sail. All of us have either access or have spent a lot of time on dinky old sailboats in lots of random places all over the world. But we've all done crazy trips in places like Australia or Sea of Cortez cobbled together. And so, you know, when you live in a place like Boise, Idaho, out in the middle of the desert, when you know other people that sail, you're probably going to go sailing with them for the limited amount of time that they do.
Chad, going back to the formation of the team, did Matt strike the nail on the head? Like, is it all Chris's madman energy that drew you to him, formulated this thing?
Yeah, I'd say that's true. I only met Chris about a month ago, maybe a little over a month ago. So I haven't been infected with his energy quite yet, but Matt was the one that dragged me into this. So
clearly, Chad is a fair bit younger than you other older dudes.
Oh.
Did you? Yeah. I told you that this is not a.
I'm bored.
This is not a puff piece. This podcast. Did you focus on? I mean, he looks young and virile and like he's ready to go to haul on stuff. Do you like focus on him and you're going to give him all the hard work? Is that what's about to happen?
I think he weighs about 120 pounds too. So he's the one going up the mast.
Oh, perfect. Cool. Hey, let's talk boat. You've got a Hobie 33, not a bad boat. You bought it. Was it 4 years ago? Cause you were gung ho to do this thing about four years ago. And then you were threatened with divorce and financial ruin if you even attempted the thing. Why didn't, I mean, that might have been the reason, but why didn't you do it 4 years ago?
Oh,
I guess it was COVID, right?
Well, COVID, and then I've had some family has gotten sick, so I haven't been able to leave the area. So that's the big reason why we haven't done it. And I know a lot of people are mad at you because you're not doing R2AK next year.
Like six people. It's like six people.
I would have been thrilled to do Washington 360 this year as a little test run. But
Well, you could do it. You could do it next year as a victory lap, or as or to lick your wounds, depending on how it goes.
We're about to talk about divorce boats. The boat's probably going to get sold after this race,
so that it's not a bad omen around your neck.
Yeah. So we got to finish it.
You got to finish. So what's the state of the boat right now?
She's pretty good. We've been doing a lot of training sails, and it's been pretty gusty conditions in Idaho. We were out the other day; it was gusting to like 27 knots. And we tore the mainsail, but I got one on order. So hopefully that'll be here in the next week. In my application process, you guys talked about standing rigging and getting a rig inspection. The rig inspection, we don't have any marine surveyors out here, but I'm getting new standing rigging. Been sort of replacing the runner rigging and just like lots of little projects. Today, hopefully, we're going to go out and run the pedal drive with Paul. So that's our next big step. In terms of safety, the boat's pretty solid for safety measures, but there's tons of projects, mm-hmm. tons of little projects.
Always a lot of projects. You'll be doing projects all the way up, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So you and Paul working on the pedal drive today, is it mostly between the two of you doing the boat prep, or is it a little bit of everybody?
Ooh, it's a little bit of everybody. Everybody's pitching in. Paul's making the prop drive. Matt's working on theoretical formulas for prop angles for the outboard for the way home. He's concerned about what kind of prop size he needs to get the boat home. Uh-huh. That's his big thing. Chad's the master of waxing. Yeah. So yeah, tons of little projects. All right. And they're continually is more and more projects, the more we dig into the little projects.
So between now and race day, which is coming up like a lightning bolt, maybe I'll ask Chad, what's the team's plan for getting the boat out here? Are you doing any training out here on the salt water, which I believe this boat has never touched before you do this?
I think there's zero chance that we'll be doing any training on the salt water unless we end up sailing from Bellingham. So yeah, I think the first time this thing touches salt water, we'll be full speed ahead going.
That's pretty awesome. I'm a fan of that approach. But you have great confidence in the boat, is from what it sounds like. You have like middling confidence in yourselves, which I appreciate. What as you envision yourself standing on deck, bow pointed north, is there anything in your imagination ahead of you that's keeping you up at night right now? Pop quiz, anybody? We haven't heard much from Paul. Let's hear.
Yeah, definitely. That's just the trailer to get us the start line.
Just the trailer.
I have a lot of concern in that trailer.
Oh, boy. So every step of the way. Okay, so you've gotten the boat to port. It's in the water, Paul. The boat's in the water.
Yep.
What's the next thing that is of great concern?
I don't really have one. I think we're going to be good.
You're going to be good. Okay.
Yeah, I have faith we're going to do just fine.
What's the expected time that you're going to make it up to Ketchikan?
My crew is like super optimistic that we're going to place in probably the top five. However, I'm anticipating like a 12-day journey, which would put us the top bottom five. I'm just hoping to finish this race. That's my sole goal, doing it safely and having as much fun as possible. If we got to anchor out, then we're going to anchor out a couple nights, whatever. Uh-huh. We're gonna have a good time.
I'm trying to remember the last Hobie 33 attempt.
It was Team Buckeye last year, and they had a failure. But they pushed it pretty hard, it sounds like. We're too chicken to push it hard, so we're going to. Or I should say I'm too chicken. My crew is gung-ho. They're all in.
So tell me a little more about what other people's roles are.
The goal is to make everybody feel as though they are empowered to be a leader on the boat. And when they take that helm, they're going to be able to issue the commands, and everybody's going to be confident that when somebody else is on the helm, they're the leader, and they're going to be able to provide direction for everybody. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the goal and the mindset that I'm trying to instill. Mm-hmm. And I think we're getting there. We've made incredible leaps and bounds. And I mean, it's definitely helped my confidence in thinking that we're going to be able to do this safely. And more so, like, I'm going to have a lot more fun if I'm not terrified the whole trip up. I mean, I truly think like half this race is all about fun. And the other half is about leadership skills and making sure everybody's making great decisions.
Mm. So the earlier part of this process, it sounds like chaos. How are your loved ones doing right now?
I mean, that's a great question. I think the hardest, at least for me, the hardest part about this race is going to be being away from my family for almost a month.
Not the question I asked there, friend. How are your family doing in the face of your half-baked Race to Alaska attempt?
Well, I'll tell you, my dad, he watched the R2AK movie and immediately texted me saying, you should not do this if you're not 100% sure. And, you know, in the back of my head, I'm like, I run into burning buildings for a living. And he's questioning my judgment of just going for a sail. So my loved ones are somewhat concerned.
I'm just going to pull that quote out. Chris Mattson, how he refers to Race to Alaska, quote, just going for a sail. Okay, got that down. Paul, how about your loved ones? What is their take on this?
Well, so my gal, she originally really wanted to come. And I was all for it until she pretty much found out that it was five dudes in one bucket. Fair enough. She's kind of, she pulled out. Then she had a pretty big case of FOMO as we're getting closer and we're doing all the prep work and it's kind of seeing the exciting part starting to unfold. But no, she's been super supportive, lots of time at the boat, and she actually is now flying into Victoria. So she's going to get a little bit of the festivities mm-hmm. and get to see us off. Right. So that's kind of cool.
That sounds pretty supportive. Chad, what about folks in your orbit?
Similar to Chris, yeah, my dad just recently watched the R2AK documentary. And, you know, he hasn't done any sailing, so he's not, and he doesn't know how much sailing I've done. So he's definitely apprehensive about the whole thing. But my girlfriend is super stoked. She loves sailing. She's excited for us. She's more excited for all the pictures and videos that she wants me to send her of the scenery. So that's, she's got some FOMO there, but yeah, most people are just excited and they're ready for me to do this journey and come back with some cool stories to tell.
And Matt, like already your attention is being pulled from your daughter's volleyball tournament. So I can imagine they're already feeling the negative effects of your involvement.
Oh, well, you know, I'm cashing in a lot of chips for this, for sure. So I have a long list of honeydews to get done here. I don't think they'll miss me. They're probably pretty anxious for me to go. I will say that much. Yeah, they'll miss the coffee maker for sure, but they're glad to see Chris and company gain somebody who can make them coffee. Probably the biggest thing is they're doubling down, making sure I got the will written out in good order.
Yeah, that's an important one. Well, it sounds, all jokes aside, like you've got a lot of supportive people in all your lives. And it's cool to see, at least for Paul, having someone invested enough to come up to Victoria. It's a good time up there. We'll do our best to point cameras your way so that your loved ones can follow along with you. And then we'll hopefully see you in Ketchikan.
Hope we make it up there.
Super stoked.
Hope the trailer makes it.
Yeah, everybody pray for Not So Fast's trailer so we can see what they do with that Hobie.
All right, and with that chat from Team Not So Fast, this episode comes to a close. Get out there on the interwebs, spend some time hunting down the social media accounts of this year's batch of teams. They're doing great stuff, finishing their pedal drives, provisioning. Oh, so much fun out there on the interwebs. We'll be back next week with a handful of more teams. Until then, be well.
Race to Alaska is a project of the Northwest Maritime Center in Port Townsend, Washington. To learn about our other projects or how you can support them, please visit us online at nwmaritime.org.